Campus.
The Lurkers mit I Don't Need to Tell Her. Und jetzt sind sie auch hier. Esso, welcome here.
Hello, thank you for asking me.
We've heard a song, which is, a very old song. And you.
Yeah, well, I'm very old.
Yeah, I mean, I would say a legend, but it's not good. Yeah?
No, no.
Isn't it?
No, we were one of the first punk bands in West London. But we weren't trendy, so we weren't... If you get a lot of these books about punk, you won't find us there, although we were there. You know, we played like the Roxy and all of the early clubs, the Vortex, and we toured around. But we didn't have a... We weren't involved of any kind of media people or fashion people. You know, we didn't have people who had clothes shops and, you know, and they had girlfriends of attaché cases and, you know, and all of this kind of thing. We were just like blokes down the pub kind of thing. We weren't cool. And it carried on being like that. And the music was about outsiders. And we found we had outsiders that used to come to see us. You know, people who used to masturbate on the bus or something, you know, something like that. You know, they're not cool. They didn't have Clash T-shirts and stuff. They were just people maybe wanking over people, you know, or so. Yeah. People I could, you know, relate to in a more spiritual level.
it wasn't like fighting the system like the Sex Pistols did. So
no. I mean, the Sex Pistols didn't fight the system. The singer married a German heiress and went to live in California and become a property developer. You know, that's some kind of fucking rebellion.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays I've heard that in London the people are celebrating 40 years of punk. But is that something you want to celebrate?
I think. It's a strange, you're right, because to celebrate 40 years of punk makes it a very structured thing when it was meant to be an unstructured kind of way of thinking. That's true. But funny enough, I was invited to the Museum of London by the curator there, this woman, who wanted to talk to me about music, but also I write, you know, I'm kind of sort of a bit of a self-publicist here, I've got to talk. About literature. What she was interested in, there was a lot of people who came from punk that became authors. And whether that link of outsiderism continued, and I was talking about it earlier on to Matt here, that it's the same thing, it's the same feel. But it's just, it's not really a different discipline because it's art. You're trying to say the same thing in another way. Even, I was just a drummer in the Lurkers. I used to drink beer and play the drums badly, and that was it. You know, but in my mind, I also had my feelings, just the same as the singer and the writer in the Lurkers. He was about being an individual, being ostracised, but it was more of a psychological thing rather than being like with, you know, Joseph Stalin and Joseph Strummer marching down the street in a designer shirt, you know, let's break the system. And that's just fucking bollocks, you know what I mean? You know, this was just outsiderism. But, you know, my writing is obviously more complex because you've got to maintain it through a novel. But it is the subject matter is the outsider and the forces behind that, of how an outsider feels that way, you know.
Ja, vielleicht machen wir an der Stelle mal einen kleinen Cut, denn wir müssen vielleicht auch mal das ein oder andere übersetzen. Ja. Ne, wir haben also hier jetzt schon eine Menge gehört zum Eingang der Show. Manic Esso, a.k.a. Pete Haynes, Drummer der Lurkers, ist hier zu Gast. Und er ist nicht nur der ehemalige Drummer der Lurkers oder jetzige Drummer von God's Lonely Man, einer quasi Nachfolgeband der Lurkers, sondern auch ein Autor, ein anerkannter Schriftsteller. Und er hat gerade erzählt, da kam so eins zum anderen, weil Stefan ihn gefragt hat nach dem 40-jährigen Punk-Jubiläum, wie es in England gerade begangen wird und wo die Lurkers in einen Topf geschmissen werden mit all den anderen Bands, die man so kennt, Sex Pistols, Clash und so weiter. Und er sagt halt, das waren wir nicht. Ne? Wir waren nicht die Rebellen, die da mit erhobener Faust durch die Straßen gegangen sind, mit Designerklamotten und die Hipster oder so. Wir waren ganz normale Leute, die in der Kneipe gegangen sind, gerne einen getrunken haben und haben halt Musik gespielt. Und mit diesem ganzen Fashion-Kram und so weiter haben wir nichts am Hut gehabt. Und in Wirklichkeit war das Gefühl, Punk zu sein, ein bisschen sowas wie ein Outsider zu sein, aber nicht genau zu wissen, was für eine Art Outsider, warum, wieso, weshalb. Und das ist ein Gefühl, was er nach wie vor in seinen Romanen transportiert und wo er auch immer wieder die Zusammenhänge findet, wenn er sich mit Leuten über Punk und die dazugehörige Kultur unterhält.
Ja, besser kann man es nicht übersetzen, denke ich mal. Also wir haben jetzt mal alles zusammengefasst erstmal. Ich denke, wir sollten dann jetzt auch einen Song, einen weiteren Song spielen. Should we play one song of your... Maybe your record you brought here?
Yeah, if you, what should we play? Let's do Smiling Inside, number 3.
Ja.
Okay. Dazu muss man, a happy song from miserable people.
Dazu muss man sagen, die Band God's Lonely Man ist benannt nach der zweiten LP der Lurkers und besteht auch nur aus Lurkers. No? Only Lurkers musicians in this band.
It's the original group, except for the singer isn't there.
Yeah.
He's an alcoholic.
Und da sie aber alle schon etwas älter sind und keinen Bock mehr haben, auf den Stress auf die Bühne zu steigen, machen sie da nur CDs und gehen also nicht mehr auf Tour. Und hören sich aber fantastisch genauso an wie die guten alten Lurkers. Und davon könnt ihr euch jetzt auch selbst überzeugen.
Smiling Inside jetzt. Die New York Dolls waren das jetzt gerade mit Subway Train. Und hier zu Gast ist Esso von den Lurkers. So we've played a song of the New York Dolls. You told me that it's a huge influence to you. Ist es ein großer Einfluss für dich?
Yeah, I think we thought the Dolls were the most, they were the biggest influence for us for punk in London. You got to remember Malcolm McLaren, who managed the Sex Pistols, he managed the New York Dolls at the end of their end, after about 1973, 74. He got hold of them. He could see that they were like this, they were like a fun, decadent group. And they were like, it was to do with irony. They were poking fun. It wasn't serious at all. I mean, they were men dressed as women from New York. You know, they had New York accents and they dressed very camp. And but the songs, yeah, I mean, there were songs that... People said they looked like the Rolling Stones, right? But they were like taking the mickey out the Rolling Stones as well. They were the rough end of New York doing camp music. Now, they were a very influential group, the New York Dolls. Everybody from Morrissey, you know Morrissey?
Yeah. The Smiths.
Yeah, the Smiths. Now, he started up the New York Dolls fan club in 1975, and he was from Manchester. And he only had three, I think, people that got in touch with him. And one of them was the guy out the Clash, the guitarist. He'd written to him.
Yeah.
This is before the Clash, you see. The Dolls were a very influential group, but they didn't sell hardly any records, you know, and a bit like the Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
They were a very, very important group, but they influenced an awful lot of people, but they sold hardly any records. And again, they come from New York, and then after them, of course, you had the Ramones. To me, punk... was a New York-based phenomenon, rather than this English thing that we were talking about earlier on, where it became a very politicised thing about Thatcher, Reagan, homelessness, fascism, communism. I don't think the punk, the word punk is someone who's an outsider, not someone really has got anything to say as some kind of celebrity political sort of leader, you know, like Joe Strummer, you know, who was a property owner, you know. I mean, it's fucking bullshit. You know?
Ja, Joe Strummer-Bashing auch hier bei Hellfire Radio. Ich weiß nicht, ob ihr es verstanden habt, aber es ging natürlich um die New York Dolls und ihren Einfluss auf die Entwicklung der englischen Punkrock-Szene. Und Manic Esso hat halt beschrieben, dass die New York Dolls für sie ganz entscheidend waren. Und nicht nur für sie, sondern eben auch für andere Leute, die später dann bekannt geworden sind. Zum Beispiel Morrissey, der Sänger von den Smiths, hat lange, lange bevor er selber Musik gemacht hat, einen New York Dolls Fanclub gegründet. Und Mitglied da war auch der erste Gitarrist von The Clash, bevor es The Clash gab. Und so trafen sich eigentlich die wenigen New York Dolls Admirer in England und haben im Prinzip den englischen Punk dann aus dem Boden gehoben. Und er grenzt es total ab von der späteren politischen Entwicklung des Punk in der Ära von Thatcher in England oder auch Ronald Reagan in den USA, als Punk mehr und mehr aggressiv oder auch zum Teil plakativ wurde. Und er sagte, nee, das war nicht unser Ding. Für uns war Punk zum einen eine Fun-Sache, zum anderen aber auch, da ging es um Outsider, um Außenseiter, um eine psychologische Geschichte, um Leute, die heranwachsen und sich mit ihrer Welt auseinandersetzen, aber eben nicht um Leute, die nach vorne gehen und irgendwelche kommunistischen Parolen brüllen oder sonst irgendwie sich auf die Art und Weise in den Vordergrund schieben. Und diesen Zwist oder diese Unterscheidung, die habe ich schon häufiger gehört, gerade wenn es um die englische Punkrock-Entwicklung aus den 70ern in die 80er hinein geht, da scheiden sich dann ganz enorm die Geister. Denn nachdem die ursprüngliche erste Punkrock-Welle mit Bands eben wie den Lurkers oder auch den Vibrators, Chelsea und andere Bands, nachdem das in den frühen 80ern so langsam aber sicher wegging und neue Bands nach vorne kamen, da spaltete sich die Szene ganz schnell auf in sehr plakative politische Bands, Auf der einen Seite, auf der anderen Seite gab es dann plötzlich auch die extrem rechten Bands, rassistische Skinheads-Bands, die sich auf einmal der alten Musik bemächtigten und letztendlich auch für Probleme der alten Punkbands sorgten. You've told us before that you and also other bands from the early English punk scene had a lot of trouble with the upcoming racist skinhead movement in the 80s in England.
Yeah, I mean, they ruined it for the Lurkers. You know, we were singing songs about can't get a girlfriend, you know. And yet you'd have these people come along, there'd be Zeke Heiling, and this kind of, and it later it took on in Europe, you know, with all the skinhead stuff they got over there. They wore very much a uniform. But in those days, they looked like football supporters with just shaven heads. But they were after the event, I mean, because the skinhead thing was 10 years earlier. But these people got back together, or younger people, and they were quite tribal. Their politics was a National Front British movement. But for some reason, they picked on punk groups. Sham 69, in a way, courted this. He sort of encouraged it to get an audience. But he thought, Jimmy thought it was a class thing to fight the system, and he got it wrong. You know, these people were actually, they were very divisive people. And, you know, I didn't like it, you know, and I would actually get involved. If I saw someone on the floor getting kicked about by four people, I would jump in and usually get beaten up myself. But, yeah, they ruined our gigs. And in the end, we stopped playing a lot of places, like a lot of other groups did. You know, and again, this politics thing that got into it, you know, we just weren't a political group at all. I mean, it was about the individual. It's about punk, the isolated person against, you know, what mainstream people are doing in society. It's about the small person on the outside not being invited. And it's certainly got nothing to do with these fucking lunatics coming around Zeke Heiling. And yeah, they just ruined it for people. And also, the bullies, like most wankers, you know.
Do you have another music wish to play?
Yeah, let's play Bad Man by Cockney Rejects.
Yes, I got it.
You got it?
You got it? The Cockney Rejects?
Yeah, Bad Man.
But there not you have the... your skinhead band.
Yeah, but they're not a skinhead band.
No, I know. But all the skins like them. It was always the same. And I remember a really terrible scene. I was just 15 years old, and I used to stand outside of a pizza bar here around the corner in the street where all our punk bars were. And I hadn't enough money to drink a beer inside the bar, so I stood outside and drank bottles. I've seen a bunch of 6-7 skins running down the streets. Oi, when they're running down the back streets. Oi. And they were just heading for the next victim.
Yeah, and
baited up. It was a war cry, something like that.
Well, I don't want to talk about it on air, but I had an argument with a guy at Bad Manners because he got back together and they did a thing about England. They had these skinheads there. I said, you do realise that some of these people go out of this place and they see some Pakistani bloke or someone stand at a bus stop and they'll pick on him because they've all gone out all fueled up for this. And he said, oh, well, it's not my problem and everything, because he's not a bad guy. I mean, he's okay. But I would, why get involved in that nonsense? Mm. You know, I mean, if you're in a group, there's plenty of other things you can talk about. Size of your dick or something, you know, talk about that. You know, I've got a 1-inch dick, fuck it. You know what I mean? You know, I can't get a blowjob off a schoolgirl, anything. You know, but all this sort of England kind of... Because what it does for these people, it creates a platform for these people. They think it's acceptable, you see, because somebody's telling them it's okay. Mm. So they have some kind of lead.
And they're not outsiders anymore, or they feel...
No, that's right. And they pick on outsiders, you see. And, it was always something I never, you know... Well, it's a million miles from what we're about. You know, it's a million miles from what I'm about. Yeah.
Also auch ein Problem, dass einige Bands halt, dass sich dann die Kids quasi sich dazugehörig fühlen, wenn eben plötzlich ein Leader dann solche Parolen brüllt. Jetzt kommen wir auf jeden Fall zu Cockney Rejects mit Bad Man, gewünscht von Esso, von den Lurkers.
Good night.
Die Beatles waren das gerade mit I Saw Her Standing. Nicht gewünscht von den Lurkers, aber wir haben es einfach mal gespielt. We just played it for fun, because we're professionals here. So,
it's very British music.
Yeah, so typical British music. I figure out that you've also played on television a long, long time ago. Can you tell us the anecdote about it?
Well,
Top of the Pops.
Top of the Pops.
Well, we did a couple of TV things. You know, I mean, the Lurkers weren't a big group by any means, but we sold an awful lot of records at that time. I suppose people say we were sort of influential at that time, especially Pete's guitar sound. But yeah, but we went on TV a couple of times, and one of them was Top of the Pops. And we did Revolver, which had the comic Peter Cook. I don't know if you had heard of these people, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. He was doing that show, but Top of the Pops was the thing that people went on. The very cool people said we wouldn't go on Top of the Pops because it's very commercial, and you know, and because we're a serious group, but we never considered ourselves to be serious. We enjoyed playing, and you know, it was good fun. But you know, the day we went on, it was our roadie Pete Edwards, who died last year, unfortunately. It was his birthday, and so we were drunk from about 3 o'clock. And, and it, you know, as I was saying about earlier on, it's it upset the very fey floor manager they had because of our behaviour and me mucking about. You know, we were only 22 years of age. But yeah, they had a lot of these ugly women from West London there in their very funny outfits, and they didn't like us because it was punk music. They wanted to watch sort of disco. Disco had come in. And they, you know, and they had these dancers there and these young girls with their sort of silver hair. And then they had us on, you know, sort of drunk mucking about. Anyway, we had to do it again because it all went wrong. And but when we did it again, the floor manager couldn't get, because nobody liked us, so they all wanted to go home. But he forced about 8 of them to stand in front of the stage. So if ever you see it, all the film is just behind a few bobbing heads. But if you can see their faces are just bored and they're looking at us, you know. And of course, this poor bloke with his hands on his hips, the floor manager was saying, "It's ruined, it's ruined. The whole night is ruined." But yeah, so it was good fun. But it was hardly rock and roll, but it was good fun.
Erinnert mich ein bisschen an den Beat Club, ne? Also bei uns gab es ja im Fernsehen in den 60er, 70ern, auch noch in den 80ern den Beat Club, und eine ähnliche Sendung war Top of the Pops in England. Gibt's ja auch heute noch, sehr kommerzielle Sendung, bildet in erster Linie Bands ab, die erfolgreich viel Platten verkaufen. Und das waren zu der Zeit eben auch die Lurkers. Obwohl es niemand verstanden hat, dass sie dort eingeladen worden sind oder dass sie überhaupt da hingegangen sind, weil andere wiederum fanden, die waren zu cool, um das zu machen. Und wenn ihr schon mal den Beat Club gesehen habt, dann habt ihr bestimmt auch schon mal gesehen, dass vor den Bands, die da vermeintlich live agieren, aber natürlich per Playback spielen, so ein paar wippende Köpfe sind, die so als Schattenriss mit aufgenommen werden. Und das sieht dann immer so aus, als stände da ein Riesenpublikum. Und genauso hat man das bei Top of the Pops auch gemacht. Und tatsächlich standen dabei nur so 6 bis 8 Leute, die da mehr oder weniger in so ins Kamerabild eingefangen worden sind. Und die hat überhaupt keinen Bock, da zu stehen, und auch keinen Bock auf die Lurkers. Haben sich aber dann mit Mühe und Not so ein bisschen bewegt. Und man sah von hinten dann nur wippende Köpfe und wippende Hüften und von vorne irgendwelche Grimassen, die völlig gelangweilt und genervt waren. Und die Band war völlig besoffen, weil sie schon seit nachmittags mit ihrem Roadie dessen Geburtstag gefeiert hatte. So geht's zu, hinter den Kulissen einer Fernsehshow.
Und also, sie mussten es vor allen Dingen auch zweimal aufnehmen, weil es beim ersten Mal nicht geklappt hat. Und da hieß es dann einfach nur, die ganze Show ist ruiniert, it's ruined, hieß es dann nur. Ja, das ist auf jeden Fall hängen geblieben von der gesamten Sache.
Wenn ihr nochmal im Fernsehen so eine Musiksendung seht, ne, von wegen hier Superstars auf der Bühne und ausflippendes Publikum, dann stellt euch nur mal bitte vor, wie gefaked das alles ist und dass dort im Prinzip eigentlich nur 3 Leute jubeln und der Rest wird reinkopiert.
Ja, geht ja heutzutage noch einfacher als damals. Heute nimmt man nur eine Person auf. Nowadays it's even easier to... In your time you have had 6 people standing here, and nowadays you just copy digitally 3 persons everywhere into the picture.
So. Yeah, I mean, there weren't the computer graphics, of course, but I don't know. I don't think we would have been, we would have fitted in even in a sort of digital sort of correct age. Something would have gone wrong with us.
Do you follow actual music, other style of music, or do you fancy any bands from...
Well, you know, I've got to say, I was a drummer in a punk band, and I was lucky to have been around at that time, coming from that part of West London. But I'm not really a musicy person. I always wanted to be a writer, and you know, and I'm lucky enough to have been published. I've had books published, But music-wise, yeah, music's always influenced me on an emotional level rather than a fashion level of wanting to go somewhere and dress like other people. For me, music has influenced me a great deal. It's been one of the biggest, I suppose, influences in my life to trigger off certain emotions, like it does with a lot of people, however they feel. Yeah. And I would say some of the things I've written has come from music. A lot of it is to do with loneliness or aggression, and it is, again, the subject of The Outsider. So I've never gone to see groups. If I go and see someone, I'll just go and see someone, and I end up there by mistake or whatever. I've only ever really been to 3 gigs in my life where I think I'm going to go and see that group. But I've always listened to music. But what I do listen to a lot is I listen to a lot of early rockabilly with a... I'm staying with Uli, and he likes very similar music. I like the very early Roy Orbison stuff, but it's very dark. Mm. It's very dark music, as is the sort of the Johnny Cash stuff. And I love Hank Williams, who my poor old dad used to play. That's still very strong for me, that kind of music. Of course, I love New York music, the New York Dolls, but the Velvet Underground. If you listen to someone like European Sun... which was a song recorded in 66, 67. Well, it could have been recorded in 1978 by a band. It's just a very stripped down 3 chords, manic kind of song. It's a lot of energy there. And they were very honest at what they were doing. They were kind of decadent with Andy Warhol, but their music was different and they were very, very original. So I find it very hard to take on other people, but I do listen to a lot of people, and I still listen to the Ramones, of course. But other music, I like a lot of British music from the late 60s, The Move, The Kinks, The Who, especially The Who and The Move. Modern music, there hasn't really been anything, but as I was talking about earlier on, individual pieces of music, like modern metal drummers, I can appreciate it. I look at it and I think these people are great at what they're doing. But, and as you'll know, being younger people here on this station, unless you go outside and you're involved in some kind of cult or a subcult, music now is all done by, businessmen. You've got this sort of kind of crap, where it's Adele or whatever, and you've got this credit card rock festivals, and it's all been this homogenised, kind of standardised corporate thing, very much like going to buy clothes. Wherever you go, there's the same... chain stores, and music has become that. Well, I'm so old and so miserable, I'm not going to get excited about this kind of thing. I wasn't excited about it when I was 22, so I'm not going to be excited now. I still talk about penis sizes to men on buses, drunk men on buses. How big's your fucking dick? That's what I'm interested in talking about. I don't want to talk about
12 inch or
No. I won't talk to anyone who's got a 12 inch dick. 4 inch and under. Put it in my ball game. Yeah. Something I can feel comfortable with.
Also, den letzten Teil habe ich jetzt nicht verstanden. Aber in erster Linie hat er erzählt, dass er gar nicht so sehr der durch und durch Musiker immer war oder ist, den man ihm vielleicht unterstellen könnte als Drummer der Lurkers. Er hatte halt das Glück, zu der richtigen Zeit, in der richtigen Band, in der richtigen Ecke abgebildet zu sein und mitmachen zu dürfen. Aber eigentlich hat er sich selber immer als Autor gesehen, als Schreiber. Und Musik hat bei ihm immer als Trigger funktioniert, um Gefühle rauszulassen, um psychologische Zustände zu erreichen, um einfach irgendwie Erlebnisse nochmal zu vertiefen. Musik ist... etwas sehr Psychologisches bei ihm und nicht irgendwie was die absolute Profession ausmacht. Und so ist er letztendlich auch nach wie vor in einem musikalischen Kosmos unterwegs, der sich nicht sehr geändert hat. Ne? Also er hört sehr viel alte Musik. Er zitierte gerade eben Rockabilly, Roy Orbison, Johnny Cash, aber auch Hank Williams, was sein Vater gehört hat. Oder eben auch die 60s Bands wie The Who und The Move. Who hören wir gleich hier nochmal. Und er kann jetzt nicht unbedingt so viel damit anfangen, einzelnen musikalischen Styles zu folgen, wobei er aber dennoch sagt, was er bewundert als Schlagzeuger vor allen Dingen, wenn er junge Musiker sieht, was die so drauf haben, was die so können, dann fällt er vom Glauben ab, weil das ist weit jenseits dessen, was er je gekonnt hat oder was er auch jemals kennengelernt hat damals. Und da hat sich doch eine Menge entwickelt und das schätzt er natürlich auch sehr. But I think when nowadays people celebrate artificial things like 40 years of punk rock, it's a nonsense birthday. No one ever did a real cake for it. But people come to you and treat you like some kind of icon or idol because you're part of the lurkers.
Mm.
What triggers it with you? What do you think about these people, and what do you think about the development of this music business? What comes around with you?
Well, I mean, I'm really detached from it, and yeah, I understand what you mean. I mean, punk having an organised birthday party by who? You know, I mean, one thing which is quite funny about this is what's written down in history isn't actually the truth, hardly ever, anyway. And well, I heard a funny story about not the Museum of London, but another museum in London. They got someone down there, an American artist, to talk about 40 years of punk in London when he was 43 years of age. And, you know, and the woman who, the curator, she was about 28. And this was told to me by somebody who was there. And he said to this guy, "But you were three and you didn't live in London." And he said, "It doesn't matter. It's to do with the spirit and soul." You see? So it's a shame when you think of all of his punk bands sweating for fucking playing for 50p in his clubs. In 1976 and 1977, he got some fucking asshole all of his years later, you know, a trendy suit on, some artist from fucking New York, saying, "Oh, well, man, you know, it's the spirit and the soul if you can live it through your psyche." Yeah. You know, I mean, okay, no, take it straight up the arsehole and backwards, you know. It's ruined the whole thing, you know. But then again, that's academics for you. You know, you read something in the paper, it isn't true what happened. Most academic people get things wrong, don't they? I mean, it's what becomes knowledge. It's fed into the next generation. They take this untruth as a truth and they go forward. So it's no different with punk. But it's an irony, really, this sort of a young kind of aggressive kind of venting of energy. And it ends up with some American, you know, artist who was 3 years of age in Oklahoma or something, having some kind of psychic fucking understanding of what was going on in West London. But, yeah, so it's bollocks, basically.
Yeah. But around these dates, and does it happen that you do meet a lot of more of the your old mates from earlier times, sometimes like a Jubilee meeting?
Well, no, because I was never really involved in in this kind of thing, really, but they are around now. A lot of these groups are getting back together. Excuse me. And I've got some friends. It's actually John King, the writer. He wrote Football Factory. Have you heard of this? Mm-hmm. Well, his company published one of my novels. And John's a friend of mine, but he's a real fanatic about punk music. And he wrote a book called Human Punk. And he's got like him and two friends, Mark and Andy, they do human punk nights at the 100 Club. And they put on these groups. I think they would have liked to have done it in 1979, but they're doing it now. But yeah, I mean, and the old groups are playing. And I do have a chat to the people. But yeah, I mean, it isn't really anything I'm part of. I was asked to go to the Museum of London to speak to the curator, as I say, but that was to do really about my books, you know, which is really more what I'm about and what I've always been about. I was just very lucky that I was around, and I was a shit drummer, you know. And, you know, I mean, it was just, we got better as we went along. The music was one thing, but musician-wise, I wouldn't have ever considered myself any great musician or talk about people of their musical ability. I wasn't interested. I was interested whether people could drink a lot, you know, just go out for a drink and have a laugh, you know. I mean, and it isn't really a lot different now when I meet people, you know. I just like to have a beer with them. But, yeah, but as I say, it's the it's the literature, but there is a direct link between what I see as punk, as the isolated person, and what I write about. And what I write about is the outsider. And it follows very much a tradition of outsider writing, you know, whether it's Wilson's Outsider. There is a body of work there. And I suppose mine is, I'm not comparing myself to him, but my work is within that body of literature, I suppose. Yeah.
But you're still doing good music, and I think we should play another song from God's Lonely Man when we are so lucky to have you here.
Yeah. So lucky, you must be desperate for people. number 11.
Okay.
There goes Deborah. It's the only song with a female in it.
Okay. And cheers to Deborah.
Yeah. Song über Deborah.
Wir haben gerade ein bisschen über Space, Raum gesprochen, denn in erster Linie gibt es ein ganz großes Thema bei Manic Esso oder Pete Haines. Und das ist der Outsider, die isolierte Person, der Mensch, der sich nirgendwo so richtig zu Hause fühlt und so ein bisschen abandoned ist, so ein bisschen alleingelassen, so ein bisschen unsicher auch. Das Gefühl, was er hatte oder was er mit Punkrock identifiziert und was er nach wie vor in seinen Büchern transportiert. Und wir haben gerade zwischen den Liedern hier ein bisschen ohne die Mikrofone darüber gesprochen, wie sehr das auch damit zu tun hat, wo man herkommt. Dass zum Beispiel Menschen, die in den Vorstädten leben oder in Dörfern, wo die soziokulturelle Gestaltung sich meistens so ein bisschen monothematisch darstellt, wo Leute im Prinzip eigentlich sehr schnell in Schubladen gepresst werden und wenn sie da nicht reinpassen, auch ganz erhebliche Probleme bekommen, dass es die eher in die Städte zieht, weil dort in der großen Masse letztendlich doch wieder Freiräume möglich sind. Und dass gerade viele Menschen, die im Punkrock aktiv sind oder für die Punkrock viel bedeutet hat, eben auch diese Erfahrung in Vorstädten, in Dörfern, in engen kleinen Gemeinden, wo man nicht zum Atmen kommt, gemacht haben und daraus einfach fliehen mussten. The Outsider, the prominent topic of your punkrock feeling, of your novels.
It's followed me through all my life.
Are you still feeling like an outsider?
I feel a lot better about myself, but no, yeah, I seem to approach things from an outsider's perspective. But, you know, it was confirmed to me when I was younger. Like when I was 15, I read Mice and Men by John Steinbeck. And, you know, American literature is my favourite kind of literature. Unlike a lot of English work, which is, unfortunately, there's so much to do with class and status and language. But the American work looks at the experience of a person. And behind that experience, for example, especially John Steinbeck in Grapes of Wrath, but my favourite book is Mice and Men, the banks in the east of America, they're corrupt. They created dust bowls and they created a massive unemployment. But he follows it, without using the word politics, through the experience of two disabled people. And it's what impacts people when these banks, just as they're doing now, they start wars, First World War, Second World War, and what's happening now in the Middle East. It's the experience of that person in Iraq trying to make some bread or something, you see. Their life has been impacted upon because of the Bush administration with oil. And, you know, you don't have to talk about politics because once you get involved with politicians, you get involved with very, very devious liars. But it's to stick with people, with the small person. And it's through their experience we can understand the bigger picture. And John Steinbeck did that wonderfully with Mice and Men, how the individual is limited. They aren't in power to have a life at all. And yet people blame them and they blame themselves. Well, really, their state of being has come about because of a banking system and corrupt governments, you see. And I understood that at quite a young age, I think, because my mother worked in service. From the age of 12, she had to go to work, where she come from in Wales, and she only had one Wednesday afternoon off a month and was paid the equivalent in euro cents of about 50 cents a week. Now, I kind of resented that, and I think that with an outsider's kind of view of putting that with sort of socialism, I understand things, by the way, it impacts upon the poorer person and the smaller person who doesn't have a voice. And that's one reason, if I were playing in a punk band, I didn't like all of this kind of marching behind a banner, this rock against racism, because I saw that being used for political ends. And the person who was being used, primarily the black person, they were just being used. Yeah, so it's followed me through with all my work I talk about now and my writing. But if you're interested in my writing, because I think it's a bit late, it's www.petehaines.co.uk. I hope you have a nice life. I hope you live for many years. And thank you for listening to me.
Also das war jetzt ein etwas längeres Statement zum Thema des isolierten Außenseiters, des einfachen Menschen. Und er hat darauf hingewiesen, dass seine Lieblingsliteratur, die ihn so beeinflusst hat, auch als Autor, die amerikanische eigentlich ist, weil in der amerikanischen Literatur, explizit bei John Steinbeck, zum Beispiel von Mäusen und Menschen, dass dort halt eben viele, viele gesellschaftliche Probleme, Zeitprobleme runtergebrochen werden auf die psychologische Situation des Einzelnen. Die psychologische Situation, in der sich der Einzelne befindet, auf die natürlich äußere Entwicklungen, politische Dinge, gesellschaftliche Dinge Einfluss haben. Aber gerade die Darstellung in der individuellen Art und Weise sind das, was ihn besonders fasziniert und was er auch versucht in seiner Literatur darzustellen. Wir haben auf jeden Fall auf unserer Homepage hellfire.com, hellfire-radio.com, Entschuldigung.
Oder kölncampus.com/hellfire.
Das gibt's auch. Da haben wir einen Link zu seiner Seite draufgesetzt, wo ihr euch näher informieren könnt über seine Bücher. Natürlich auch über die Musik von God's Lonely Man oder den Lurkers oder über die Person Pete Haines alias Maniac Esso. Aber eben, wo ihr auch die Bücher euch mal näher anschauen könnt und vielleicht auch mal irgendwie ordern könnt. Er würde nämlich sehr gerne auch Leser gewinnen hier in Deutschland, auch wenn die Bücher noch nicht übersetzt worden sind. Aber ich finde, es macht ja auch Spaß, Bücher auf Englisch zu lesen. Davon abgesehen, a lot of people listening to us are younger people, students or even school boys, school girls, pupils. And when they identify themselves as outsiders, it's sometimes dramatic and tragic.
Yeah, of course.
And can you give them any kind of, any blink of hope?
Yeah, I think so. It's to be very mindful. But you've only got one life, and your life is as important as anybody else's, and not to associate or align yourself with kind of trendy kind of music or politics, people who drink blood, they think they're, you know, this kind of crazy kind of goth or whatever. It might be interesting, it's dark, it's black, it's nightmarish, but they're usually bullshitting bastards, these people, you see. And the most interesting thing you can do is to look at yourself and learn and educate yourself. And if you've got that depth and sensitivity where you are kind of upset and you find life very hard, then it shows you're on the right course to be a good person and offer yourself to other people later in life, you see.
Ja, ich glaube, das kann man als Schlusswort so stehen lassen. Thank you very much, Maniac Esso, Pete Haines.
Thank you very much for asking me. And now we're going for a beer.
And now we're going for a beer. Das war's mit Hellfire Radio für heute. Mein Name ist Mac Hellfire.
Mein Name ist Stefan Hellfire.
Ich war Tim Hellfire.
Ja, und wir hören uns dann in 2 Wochen wieder. Auf jeden Fall wieder voll am Start.
You have to have
it. Haben wir noch einen Song, den wir raushauen?
Na klar.
Yeah, number 8.
It's racing
through time.
Yeah, racing through time. We took a race through time. So thanks for being here and bye bye. Auf Wiedersehen.
But time doesn't exist.
www.kölncampus.com. www.kölncampus.com.